The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury today. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we have a fantastic program for you today. Today, I want to talk to you about something that I think has astounding implications for America. I want to talk about trust, or more specifically, broken trust. America is suffering a trust crisis. People no longer know what to trust or who to trust. Institutions that once commanded trust no longer have it. And the situation, if you look at it, is getting worse all the time. But there's implications from living in a society that does not trust each other, or people that don't trust each other in that society. It's really sad that we've gotten to this point in America. But unless something changes really fast, that sadness is just the beginning, because it's going to get a lot worse. The emotions people will be dealing with are a lot worse than just sadness unless something changes. And trust was something that really set America apart from much of the rest of the world. Historically, the United States and many of the Western democracies have had high levels of trust across, you know, most of those institutions, those pillar institutions that define society. But that trust is breaking. It's eroding away. It's not like it used to be today. And I think you, if you really think about it, you'll agree with that too. Historian Neil Ferguson, he talks about these killer apps that set the West apart from the rest of the world. He talked about science and the rule of law, or government, medicine, etc. All these institutions that are now failing people. They are failing people in many, many ways. And if you look at the numbers, if you look at the percent of people who trust these institutions, and how that's just declining, you wonder if it's even reversible. Can the numbers even be turned around at this point? You know, will people ever be able to trust these institutions again? It's a good question, and it demands an answer. Yeah, let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about, and just to show you how bad it's getting. Richard Edelman. He's a CEO of the communications and marketing firm Edelman. And for the last 17 years, they've been surveying people around the world and asking them questions about their level of trust in various institutions. And if you look at the data, what you find is that basically trust in virtually all institutions has been going down. It's been a steady decline since the year 2000. And more recently, the trust levels, the trust measurements have just plummeted. So now, as we are in 2017, the most recent data from Edelman, Edelman himself is declaring that trust is, quote, in crisis in many countries. It's in crisis. Here's what Edelman had to say about this year's report, and I'll go ahead and quote from him. He said, trust has imploded in 2017. So we saw this steady decline over the last 17 years, and now he says this year something's changed. Trust has imploded. He says you see it across all the four institutions, especially in media and government, in NGOs, or the non-government organizations, and business is teetering on the edge, he says. A little further down in this interview that he gave, he said, today we are talking about a trust crisis that is causing systemic meltdown. So this is serious. Here's somebody who looks at the data, looks at the numbers for a living, and he says we are facing a systemic meltdown. He says only 15% of our respondents actually said they trust the system. 15. He said they don't believe any longer that they have a better future, that the rich are equally treated. They don't believe in future prospects for employment. He says a loss of trust in the system leads to vulnerability and economic and social fears, globalization, innovation, and the fear of immigration, the consequence of which is populism. And then he says institutions have to get out of their classic boxes. And he goes on to say that this needs to be confronted. If we're to save civilization, this trend needs to be confronted. I mean, this is civilization we're talking about. This is modern society as we know it today. This is the United States of America. This is the United Kingdom. This is Canada. This is Australia. If we want to save our societies, something has to change. These are some pretty strong words here from somebody who, you know, watches these trends for a living. But, you know, it is a problem that needs to be confronted. And the breakdown in trust is very, very real. Now, the question, of course, is what's causing it? Because if we want to fix this, we have to know what is causing it. What is behind this rapid breakdown in trust? You are listening to Trumpet Radio. This is KPCG.FM online or 101.3 on the FM dial. You can find this program, The Trumpet Daily, on SoundCloud or at thetrumpet.com. Today we're broadcasting live from beautiful Herbert W. Armstrong College from the campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. Thank you very much for joining us today. We do appreciate your comments and your feedback. We read them all, so hit us with it, the good, the bad, anything. Today we're talking about trust and more specifically the death of trust and the implications that go with that for society. And there's some pretty big implications once you start thinking about this, once you start meditating about what this means. I mean, look around the country. Look around your world today. You are seeing the results of broken trust already. We're living through it. The Ferguson riots, the riots we saw in Ferguson. How much of that is a result of broken trust or a lack of trust? The rise of Bernie Sanders, the rise of a generation that wants to bring back socialism, if not communism, to government in the United States today. I mean, Bernie Sanders, a communist, is one of the mainstream politicians today. Do you think broken trust has something to do with that? Well, it does. It does have a lot to do with that. But getting back to some more of these Edelman findings here, if you look at the charts that Edelman published in his most recent report, they're pretty shocking. There's some shocking stuff here. For example, trust in media fell to all-time lows in 2017. All-time lows. And according to Edelman, media is now distrusted in 82% of countries around the world. 82%. And he says it hit all-time lows in 17 countries this past year. So now more people distrust their media than trust it in countries like Brazil, Canada, Germany, Italy, France, Britain. So pretty much the democracies of this world. And these are countries where, for the most part, I think most people think that the media is somewhat trusted, or historically, at least, it has been trusted. Not so anymore, says Edelman. In the United States, 47% of people distrust the media. 47% of respondents said they distrust the media. That's almost half of people who watch the news or listen to the news or read the papers distrust what they read or what they hear or what they see. I mean, to these people, the media can't be trusted. And there's a reason for that. I mean, there is a reason for that. This doesn't happen in a vacuum. These things don't just happen. There's reasons for it. But why is it? Why is it that people no longer trust the media? It's because the media are liars. Have you watched the news recently? Let me give you an example of that. Last night, I caught the news about the terrible terrorist attack that just happened in that mosque at London, where that, quote, white guy drove his van into Muslims who were leaving a mosque. And I read about just how, and I saw the headlines almost immediately calling it a terrorist attack, you know, terrorist, big print in the headlines. And it was labeled terrorism right away. But think about how long it takes the media to label terrorism when it's the other way around, when it's perhaps a Muslim person who committed the terrorist attack. Think about how long it took to label terrorism, terrorism with the Boston bombing or the Fort Hood shooting. See, when the foot is on, the shoe is on the other foot, the media, the big media, the major media institutions, well, then it's, we want to downplay whether terrorism is terrorism. We don't want to use a terrorism word, and we don't want to label, you know, what religion somebody might be or what race somebody might be. But if it's, you know, the quote-unquote white guy, it's all over the headlines. And people pick up on those things. That's just reality. It's like your little children. You have little children, and they see you as a parent doing something. If you're a parent, you know how quickly kids pick up on hypocrisy. Well, it's I mean, people pick up on it with the media, too. That's just reality. Here's another example. On Wednesday, after the four Republican congressmen were shot by that former Bernie Sanders staffer, the New York Times, it ran an article comparing that shooting to the shooting of Democrat Gabby Giffords back in 2011. You probably remember that. And this article went on in the New York Times. This article went on to say that the Giffords shooting took place because of an email Sarah Palin sent out that had a picture of crosshairs covering the various electoral districts that the Republicans wanted to win. And this New York Times article went on and wrote that, quote, the link to political incitement was clear, talking about this. So here's America's biggest paper, probably considered America's leading paper, publishing total lies, just outright total lies. And we know it's lies, and everybody knows it's lies, because the shooter in that case, he lived. And he kept a journal going back several years showing that he was obsessed with Gifford long before the election. Plus all his statements he made, what he told the authorities, his history, all of that showed that there was no political motivation in that shooting. And there's been zero evidence that he ever saw that email that Sarah Palin sent out. But still, here we have, all these years later, the biggest paper in the United States publishing known lies. Why? Well, it's obvious, to support a political narrative. And this kind of stuff, it happens day after day after day. And you know, people see it. People are starting to understand that more and more. I mean, the New York Times, it's almost unreadable today. It's just one hit piece after another after another. I mean, the New York Times used to put together quality journalism. And it used to try to get to the truth in matters. But now it's just one Trump article attack piece after another, often on just small trivial things. I can't even barely stand to read it anymore. Now, they're still talking about the supposed collusion between Donald Trump's team and the Russians in hacking the election, even though there's no evidence of it. You know, even Comey said there was no evidence. And they keep running pieces from, you know, supposed anonymous sources, these anonymous leakers. And we're supposed to just take it as, you know, they publish it like it's fact when it's anonymous. You know, there's nothing backing these stories. And people see it, and they see the junk reporting, and they see the lies. And meanwhile, the world is burning. It's on fire. There's real news happening. There's real news taking place that people need to hear, that we need to hear, that you need to hear about, that you need to understand why it's taking place. And the papers and news media, they just bury it because it doesn't fit the political narrative. It doesn't fit within what they're trying to push, the views they are pushing. And this kind of stuff just goes on so often now. NPR, too. Boy, I used to really enjoy listening to NPR. And sometimes, you know, I still do because they put a lot of effort into their stories. They put a lot of work into them. But now it's like they're putting in work and effort into quality, making quality fake stories, making quality fake news, fake stories masquerading as real news. But people see it. People are starting to see it more and more. You know, 30 years ago, if the New York Times wrote something, it was probably considered, you know, almost gospel. It was the standard. It probably would have been a standard for fact-checking. The paper had a strong reputation. It used to have a good reputation. People trusted the editorial board. You know, they trusted the editors. And they believed that if the paper made a mistake, it would admit it, which the paper used to do, it seems like, a whole lot more often than they do today. And that people believe that when they did make a mistake, it was just a mistake. You know, it was an error somebody made. It was unintentional. But here's the thing. 30 years ago, people couldn't fact check the way they can now. See, the big media doesn't have control over the airwaves, over the communication lines the way that it used to. And now people can fact check on their own. And big media is losing control. And it's no wonder that the trust in the big media is breaking down. And it's no wonder that they've lost almost all of its credibility. I mean, now you just takes a couple of seconds. You just query Google, do a Google search, and you can find out what actually happened. And this past year, there were just so many fake news stories by the big media. And here we have the big media complaining about fake news on the quote-unquote alt-right, another term that was made up this past year. And where we find the real fake news is in the big media. You probably all remember the stories about Donald Trump during the election, the Donald Trump supporters, and how they were chanting, "We hate Muslims and we hate blacks and we want our country back," and all kinds of garbage stories like that. Never happened. No proof any of that ever happened. Or the stories about Donald Trump banning all Muslims. Again, never happened. Never tried to do that. Or, you know, NPR and Vox over and over and over again saying that President Trump's refugee bans were based on the countries he does business with. Pushing that kind of garbage stories. And you can just go on and on and on. The lies, the twisting of the facts. No wonder trusted media is breaking down. But this has implications for society. Anyway, back to the Edelman survey here. According to Edelman, it's not just the trust in the media that's plummeting. But trusting government, too, has just plunged. And around the world, not just in America. In America, too, but around the world. In the United States, 47% of Americans distrust their government. That's an incredibly huge number of people. That's a crisis. 47% of Americans distrust their government. About the same as what distrusts the media. There's probably a link there. But this isn't talking about just the presidency. But this is talking about the government in general. The government goes beyond the presidency. But where are we as a society? 47%, almost half of us. This is, more than 150 million people, or around 150 million people in this country distrust the government. There are implications from that, big implications from that. You know, what does it mean when so many people don't trust the government? They don't accept that the government is valid. Think that comes next? And what happens if you keep carrying on that line of reasoning? We don't trust the government. It's not my government. It's not valid. I don't have to get in line with what the government says I need to get in line with. I mean, this can lead to some pretty scary stuff pretty quickly. But even just consider what this means about the office of the presidency. You know, every time President Trump opens his mouth to speak, probably somewhere around half the country doesn't believe what he's saying. I mean, that is shocking. Half the country doesn't trust what the president says. I mean, the presidency is the highest office in the land, and millions of people don't trust what the president says. I mean, there's a time in U.S. history, not all that long ago, that when the president spoke, you knew that what he said was true. People believed the president. They knew that what came out of the president's mouth was going to be based on facts. But in the last 8 years, think of how that has changed. And now the Trump presidency. It's these past 8 years, and you know it goes beyond that, even back to George W. Bush's time in office. I mean, the office, the credibility of the office of the presidency is being destroyed. It's been absolutely demolished and eviscerated. I mean, think of, it goes all the way back to, well, really, probably even before, you know, the weapons of mass destruction to the scandals in the Clinton era with the president lying to Americans. I mean, the office is being destroyed. And what does that mean for a nation when their leader, the person that's supposed to represent the people of the land, the nation that's supposed to stand up and protect his people, whose primary job is to protect the citizens of the United States of America, when half of people don't trust him, don't trust what he says. I mean, what a tragedy. What an absolute just catastrophe for America. I mean, when you lose trust, that's not something you can gain back overnight. I mean, you can lose trust. You can lose the trust of somebody in seconds. You can open your mouth and lose the trust of people in seconds. But think about how long it takes to win back someone's trust. Think about how hard it is to win back the trust of a friend that you've lost the respect of a friend. It can take a lifetime to win that back if you can win it back. I mean, that's just human nature. That's how people operate today. If you're just tuning in to the program this morning, we are talking about trust. This is Trumpet Daily. This is the Trumpet Daily. I'm your host, Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury. Today, we are talking about just this epic breakdown, this catastrophic breakdown in trust in America. And we're talking about just how trust has imploded and how experts are warning that it can take down, if this isn't confronted, if this isn't stopped, it could take down America's whole system. And actually, even beyond America, there's a trust crisis facing this world. And we saw that, I think, in the Brexit elections. You know, people didn't trust their politicians. People didn't trust what the media was trying to spoon feed them. They started actually thinking for themselves. And I think President Trump's election probably is another manifestation of this. If you think about how President Trump campaigned throughout the primaries into the general election, he talked a lot about the other politicians that were just after their own special interests, and how they sold America down the drain to foreigners or whatever it was, how they lied, how they were constantly lying. He talked a lot about the dishonest media. I mean, he nailed it. I mean, these are things that people are concerned about. He nailed it. People believed him. They empathized with him because they see it for themselves. I mean, he connected with voters because people see this problem. I mean, recently Gallup conducted a poll, and they found that 56% of Americans had a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in America. So 56% of Americans had a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the police. And that number was up from 2015. But what about the other 44%? I mean, there's a lot of emphasis in the media about how this is a great thing. Now, the trust in police is increasing, you know, even after all these riots and things like that. But what about the other 44%? That's a huge amount number of people that don't trust the police or don't know if they can trust the police. And I suspect if you go into certain neighborhoods, that number is a lot higher. You go into inner cities in America, trust in police is very low, very low. People aren't trusting the media. People aren't trusting government. People don't trust the police anymore. Where's all this going? Where's it heading? You know what the Oxford Dictionary, you know what the word of the year was for 2016? The word of the year, each year they choose a word that typifies what happened in the year, that year. Well, the word of the year for 2016 was post-truth, hyphenated, post-truth. That was the word of the year, post-truth. And I think Oxford Dictionary nailed it. They hit the nail right on the head. Because we are living in a post-truth world. That perfectly describes where we're at today. I mean, all the pillars of society, the institutions that keep society functioning, that hold up society, they're all suffering a post-truth crisis. Trust in those institutions is failing. Herbert W. Armstrong, that just great educator, talked a lot about, you know, the pillars of civilization. He talked about education, science and technology, industry, religion, government, all those pillars that hold up civilization, and how they're crumbling today. And if people lose trust in these institutions, it won't take a lot for everything to just start to unravel. I want to read you an article from The Guardian here, and it's dated June 6th. Here's the title of this article. The title of this article is "Why We Can't Trust Academic Journals to Tell the Scientific Truth." Why we can't trust the academic journals to tell the scientific truth. And this isn't just a one-off article. This is reporting on a trend that has become more evident over the course of this last decade. But it's getting pretty bad now. Just want to read you a little bit from this article. It begins, "Hundreds of thousands of scientists took to the streets around the world in April." Quoting some of these scientists, it says, some of them were saying, "We need science because science tells the truth. We are those who can fight the fake news." The author says, "A friend who participated in one of the March for Science rallies told me." The author goes on to say, "I really wish this were true. Sadly, much evidence suggests otherwise." So here we have all these scientists supposedly, you know, the marching for truth. I think, you know, all those people marching, you know, they're very sincere about that. They want truth. And many people around the world believe that, you know, science is one institution where the truth rules, the facts rule. This article continues, "The idea that the same experiment will always produce the same result, no matter who performs it, is one of the cornerstones of science's claim to the truth. However, more than 70% of the researchers who took part in a recent study published in Nature have tried and failed to replicate another scientist's experiment. Another study found that at least 50% of life science research cannot be replicated. The same holds true for 51% of economics papers." The article says, "The findings of these studies resonate with the gut feeling of many in contemporary academia that a lot of published research findings may be false. Just like any other information source, academic journals may contain fake news." So here we have science, right? Science. You hear it all the time in the news. Oh, according to this peer-reviewed study or this published study in this prestigious academic journal or this prestigious scientific journal, the gold standard of science, such and such, is true. Well, you know what they're finding? You know what scientists are finding now? Science is just as prone to error. In fact, perhaps even more so than any other institution out there. I mean, this is a tragedy. And this is shocking because science has been upheld as something that goes beyond the politics, right? It transcends politics. It transcends ideology. It transcends biases and human biases. I mean, that's what science is all about, right? Eliminating the biases, eliminating all the things that can influence the results and getting to the truth. And you know what the dirty little secret in science is? It's worse than anything else. It's, or at least it's just as bad as any other institution in human society. Sorry to burst your bubble on that one, but it's just as prone to human nature as every other area in our society today. But it's shocking. Shocking. I mean, in science, you have to be able to reproduce it. Otherwise, it makes you wonder, where did this guy get his results from? How did he even find what he's claiming to find? You know, and then we're supposed to make decisions based off of hard, cold science. Really? Back to this article here from The Guardian, June 6th. It says, some of those who participate in the March for Science movement idealize science. Yeah, they idealize science. Yet science is in a major crisis. And we need to talk about this instead of claiming that scientists are armed with the truth. I mean, this is coming from The Guardian here, okay? This is a left-wing paper. This isn't some paper that's trying to discredit science because of global warming, anthropogenic global warming, or something like that. I mean, this is left-wing news here. The article continues, 97% of the March for Science participants want policymakers to consider scholarly evidence when drafting their policies. Okay, so these people who are marching for science, they want policymakers, the politicians, to consider the evidence they are given from the scientists. Sounds great, doesn't it? Unless the science is junk, unless the findings are junk, and guess what? That's exactly what other scientists are finding. Those that are trying to quantify how much science is good, they're finding that it's junk. And that's scary because there's a lot of good things that's produced by science. Right? There's a lot of benefits that have come from science over the years. Too many to count, too numerous. But now science is suffering a credibility problem too. This article continues. The author says, I too used to think that influencing policymakers was part of a modern academic's job description. Now I am less confident in the validity of many research findings. There are many reasons for the replication crisis in academia, from accidental statistical mistakes to sloppy peer review. However, many scholars agree that the main reason for the spread of fake news in scientific journals is the tremendous pressure in the academic system to publish in high-impact journals. See, there's a crisis of fake news in science and in the scientific academic journals. And there's a reason for it. And it gets back to human nature. Just like the human nature that's in all of us. Scientists are not separated from it. Scientists don't somehow turn off their human nature just when they become scientists, when they graduate from college and they get their first science job. This article continues. These high-impact journals demand novel and surprising results. So these prestigious journals, if you want to be published, you have to come up with some surprising results, some novel results. And everybody wants to be published. I mean, that's how your career develops, getting published in these prestigious journals. The article says, unsuccessful replications are generally considered dull, even though they make important contributions to the scientific understanding. Indeed, 44% of scientists who carried out an unsuccessful replication are unable to publish it. Look at that. Some scientist publishes something that says X plus Y equals Z, and some other scientist comes along and tries to replicate it and says, no, X plus Y does not equal Z. They don't get published. It's only the first one who came up with a surprising discovery gets published. That's what gets broadcast by the mainstream media. That's what gets accepted by, you know, the medical industry or whatever industry it is. And those that have come along later and said, no, this isn't true, they have a hard time getting published. This article continues. I have personal experience in this. My unsuccessful replication of a highly cited study has just been rejected by a high-impact journal. This is problematic for my career, since my contract as an assistant professor details exactly how many papers I need to publish in per year and what kind of journals to target. If I meet these performance indicators, my career advances. If I fail to meet them, my contract will be terminated 19 months from now. You need to be published. Publish or die in science. If you don't get published, you don't get funding. You don't get funding, you're not going to be working at the universities. So you better come up with something surprising, something novel, something interesting. Or it's curtains for you. This article says, this up-or-out policy encourages scientific misconduct. Really? 14% of scientists claim to know a scientist who has fabricated entire data sets. and 72% say they know one who has indulged in other questionable research practices, such as dropping selected data points to sharpen their results. 72% of scientists say they know other scientists that are cheating, that are lying. I mean, this is science today. And supposedly science equals truth, but it doesn't. You know, I'm talking about fabricating entire data sets. It reminds me of a book by Mark Stein. The title is A Disgrace to the Profession. In this book, Mark Stein talks a lot about the anthropogenic global warming theory that got started basically and became mainstream with the publishing of the famous hockey stick graph that shows, you know, right global temperatures, you know, going along nice and steady for many years, and then suddenly this big uptake, this spike in global warming that took place around the Industrial Revolution. And he just talks about how that data set was just junk science and basically a lie, and how it just got adopted by the mainstream academic community, the scientific community, and it started all kinds of research into it, and people worked to confirm it, and just how people were confirming these things until suddenly, oh, they weren't anymore. And they showed how it was just junk science and basically a lie. And the great thing about his book is that he uses, the way he goes about showing this is he uses the words of other scientists. It's very little of its own words. Much of it, the majority of it probably, is quoting other scientists. And scientists that are ones that believe in global warming, that they're pro the global warming narrative. It's just that they're uncomfortable with, you know, what has taken place to try to convince the public that there's this dire this catastrophe that's looming on society. And they're uncomfortable with the lies that have taken place. They say, no, this is happening, but why did we need to lie about this? And why are we just accepting this as truth when we know this is junk science? Anyway, I found a really interesting read for anybody who wanted to know how this whole anthropogenic global warming issue became the issue of the day and just how it captured the minds of so many people. Anyway, back to this replication problem that's plaguing so much of science today, pretty much every field of science. And it's a crisis because in science, if you can't replicate it, then you don't understand it. And therefore, it's just guesswork. Basically, you're left with this happens, or we see this effect from this because I said so. That's what we're left with. If you can't reproduce it, basically, you're asking us to accept what you're saying on faith. Now, of course, you know, in science, as in all disciplines, accidents happen. And sometimes you can find results that aren't there and things like that. But science is supposed to overcome that. That's what the scientific method is all about. But if you can't trust science, I mean, there's some pretty big implications there. It goes far beyond just, you know, man-made global warming or, I don't know, the creation-evolution debate or whatever it is. It goes beyond, I mean, this goes all the way to whether or not you can trust what your doctor tells you about what medications will actually do for you, what will actually help you, and what will harm you. I mean, talking about the medical industry, this is one of the worst offenders. You know, scientists that are looking at this replication problem, one of the biggest areas they're finding problems in is in the medical industry. You know, one study I wrote about, this is several years ago now, it found that one third to 40% of medical studies that were published in prestigious journals, like the gold standard of journals, couldn't be replicated. So basically, up to 40% of studies about medicines or treatments that researchers said, if you do this, this will help you this way. If you do this, it'll help you there. This will do this. This will cause that effect. Couldn't be replicated. Basically, what that means is that if you were to take the blue pill, basically you had to trust on faith that it would do what the researchers said it would do because there was no scientific basis backing it up. I mean, that is terrible. That's astounding because, as you know, if anybody's ever watched any commercial trying to sell drugs. The list of side effects, you know, it runs on. It's like, you know, take this and it'll do this. And, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da of all the different side effects that goes on that they just rattle off at the end of the commercial. I mean, this is what is happening to people out there. And the doctors, they read the prestigious journals and they say, oh, great, look at this, great new treatment for people. And they prescribe it to their patients. And they don't realize that up to 40% of that could all be junk. Or at least up to 40% of it, there's no scientific proof that it's actually helping anybody. I mean, that's a tragedy. I mean, ever since the Middle Ages, science has supposedly been, you know, it's been held up as almost the god, really. It's been supposedly this light in the dark world. It's been this messiah. It was going to, you know, it's going to separate, you know, witch doctory from truth. And science was supposed to remove, you know, all the elements of human bias and mythology and all of that. And, you know, hard, cold facts. That's what science was all about. And science promised the world that, you know, if we have enough facts, if we have enough knowledge, if we have enough information, we can solve any problem. But what we're finding is that it's creating more problems. And we're finding that it's just as prone to perpetuating error as Roman Catholic Europe was during the Dark Ages. And that's sad to say that, but that's reality. And that's what a lot of scientists are coming to see. And we're reading about it more and more. And there's, I mean, just so many examples of bad science and dangerous science. I mean, I read a study about how if you need treatment for cancer or you want treatment for cancer, you know, what's the question was, what's the best treatment for various forms of cancer? And you know what the study found? They found that the best treatment for various forms of cancer changes based on where you live. So if you have one type of cancer, depending on where you live, you'll be told the best treatment is a different treatment. You know, radiation therapy, chemotherapy, surgery, all these different treatments for cancer. Based on your zip code, you'll have a higher probability of getting told where you live surgery, or if you live in a different zip code across the country, you know, the southeastern part of the United States, the most likely thing you'll be prescribed is radiation therapy or whatever it was based on zip code. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, what is the best way to treat the various forms of cancer? And these researchers were saying, well, because, you know, the different parts of the United States are dominated by various different healthcare interests, they push their own treatments that they think are best. And depending on where you live in the United States, you're going to get a different treatment. You know, just another one of those effects of science. But here we are. We're living in a society where trust in media is failing, where trust in government and the police is failing, where trust in science is failing, people's lives are being destroyed. People's lives are being impacted. I mean, broken trust. I mean, pretty much every segment in society is suffering from this today. And they're nearing all-time lows. We haven't even talked about trust in religion. But that's got to be near all-time lows in America. I mean, especially if you judge by attendance figures, which have been declining for decades now. And that's probably not a surprise to anybody. I mean, if broken trust is a result of lies, well, it's no wonder that the religious institutions of this world are failing. I mean, the churches today, they don't teach from the Bible. And when they do, they just cherry-pick their verses. They use, you know, living translations that put things into modern language that twist the meanings. And people see this. People who actually want to go to church to learn, people that actually want to learn from the Bible, who want to know what the Bible says, that actually study their Bible, they pick up on these things. And it's no wonder people don't trust religion anymore. And what about economy? What about industry? You know, do you trust your Wells Fargo banker? You know, after all the scandals they've had recently about modifying people's mortgages, opening up credit cards and all that kind of stuff, do you trust Bank of America or Citigroup? I mean, those banks that almost failed just a few years ago, they had to be bailed out because of a subprime lending scandal, a scandal that was caused By lies, by cheating. How about the unions? You trust your union, the union that you're forced to be in to work for government, perhaps? Do you trust that union? What about your pension plan? That's about to go bankrupt because of the lies. Pension plans across America, one of the biggest, you know, underreported stories out there, financial stories out there. They're busted. They're heading for bankruptcy. The money's running out. Millions of Americans are going to find they don't have the pensions that they thought they had because of lies, because of people saying, no, you just put X number of dollars in per year, and when you reach 65, no problem. Everything will be taken care of. You'll have your pension. It'll be there. It'll be safe. You won't have to work anymore. You'll be able to pay your bills. More lies. The numbers are out there. The actuaries know it. Media knows it. Government knows it. Anybody doing anything about it? Doesn't seem like it. How about the employment numbers? You really believe that America's unemployment rate is at record lows? Does it feel that way to you? Do you really believe that America is near full employment, like we're being told? Full employment. America's near full employment. That everybody who wants a job has a job. Really? Well, that's what the economists say. You know, that's what supposedly their numbers say, at least the ones the media reports on. How about the dollar? The almighty greenback. It says right on it, in God we trust, right? That sounds pretty good. Think it means anything to the typical person? Do you think people really trust God? And what do you think's going to happen to the value of that greenback in the near future? And it's already lost 95% of its value since 1913. You know, 1913 was the year the Federal Reserve was created. You know, the same Federal Reserve that didn't see the last economic crisis coming, that told everybody that the subprime crisis was contained, the same Federal Reserve that became famous for printing hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars out of thin air, and that has artificially been keeping interest rates near zero for years. You trust that Federal Reserve to protect your wealth? You know, on Wednesday, this last week, Janet Yellen announced that the Fed would raise interest rates to the whopping high, astounding high level of 1 to 1.25%. It told everybody, no worries, economy's doing great. It's really strong. We can raise interest rates now. Really? Really? You trust that? You really think the economy's so strong? Well, if the economy's so strong, how come interest rates are still at 1.5%? I mean, that is at historically extreme level. Rarely in history has it gotten this low before. I don't know if it's ever been this low at 1.25% before. Is the economy really that strong? Oh, and then Janet Yellen said, by the way, we're also going to start unwinding our balance sheet. Yeah, the economy's strong. We're raising interest rates. Life's good. And oh, by the way, we're going to start unwinding our balance sheet. You know, all those trillions of dollars that we printed up to give the government to spend, you know, that $4.5 trillion that we printed out of thin air to give the government to spend, basically to give the government to spend, and that they spent and that money's all gone. You know, that money and the government that gave us those IOUs in return called treasury bonds or treasuries. We're holding all those treasuries that say that the taxpayers are going to pay the Federal Reserve $4.5 trillion. Well, we're going to start unwinding that. We're going to start selling those into the market now. Well, you think that won't have an effect? You know, that was one of the biggest understatements I've ever heard from the Federal Reserve. We have $4.5 trillion in treasuries on our balance sheet. We're going to start unwinding that, but don't worry. That we'll just go slow on that. Don't worry about that. You think that's not going to have an impact on interest rates? You don't think interest rates are going to start rising? And what do you think is going to happen the next time we have a crisis? You know, we're overdue. We're overdue for a recession. It's coming up. A lot of smart people think it's coming. But can our economy handle another episode of broken trust? Can it? I mean, broken trust, it takes a toll. You know, people have done all kinds of studies trying to put a dollar cost estimate on broken trust. And they look at the economies, for example, and they try to come up with a measure of, you know, how much broken trust is costing the economy. And Forbes, they wrote an article on this and the economics of trust. And it's huge. It's huge. And they even said that trust is one of the biggest things that separates the United States from the poorest countries in the world. It's trust in our economic system. It's trust in our institutions, in the rule of law, in government. And they tried to figure out how much it might be worth. They said it might be worth $12.4 trillion a year to America. $12.4 trillion a year to America. See, trust plays an incredibly vital role, not just economically speaking, but across society as a whole. And we're seeing this breakdown in trust across virtually every institution in America. People don't trust anything anymore. And that has huge implications. I mean, what are you left with when you don't have trust? When you don't have trust, what are you left with? Here's what Richard Edelman says. Remember, Edelman's that fellow we were talking about at the top of the hour. His company has been conducting those surveys on trust for the past 17 years. And he was the one who said that this trust crisis was causing a, quote, systemic meltdown. And he warns about the cycle of fear and distrust. It's just building and it's snowballing. And here's what he says the result will be. He says the lack of belief in system plus the economic and social fears plus the loss of trust in institutions equals populism. Well, you know what? I'd go one step further, because it won't end in populism. It won't just end in populism. We've seen that today. We're seeing that in Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. We're seeing that around the world with Marie Le Pen in France. It's not going to end with populism. Populism is the first step. That comes, sure, that might come next. But you know what comes after that? Tyranny. The populist leaders, they get more and more forceful to try to turn around the problems that they see. They don't identify the problems correctly, but they want to affect, change the symptoms. They want to patch over the symptoms. They become more dictatorial. And you know where that tyranny leads? Well, eventually it leads to anarchy, because when trust in the system breaks down, and if it isn't healed quickly, then anarchy is a result. And you can see that. You saw that with Russia, with Boris Yeltsin after the fall of the Berlin Wall, when communism was discredited. Look at the anarchy that happened in Russia. The destruction, the rioting, the burning, all of that. It's not far behind. See, that's the result. That's history. You know, that's where things are heading if they don't change. Look, if you're looking to any of these institutions that we talked about today to solve America's problems, you are in for a terrible, terrible disappointment. Science can't solve this world's problems. The government cannot solve this world's problems. The education system, the economic system, all these institutions, these pillars are coming under attack. And that's where we are headed. And that's where this world is headed. Good news is, beyond this darkness that we've been talking about today, there is a lot of light. And that is something that you can put your trust in. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Your Bible says there is light at the end of the tunnel. But there's hard times that are coming first. God says, cursed is the man that trusts in man. God says, trust, put your trust in God. That's where there's true trust. That's where there's hope. But you've got to believe what the Bible says. You have to believe. And you have to look to God, the creator of this universe. But this world doesn't want to do that. And so we're left with a crisis of trust. Well, we're coming to the end of the Trumpet Daily program today. Thank you very much for joining us. Again, I'm Robert Morley, filling in for Stephen Fleury. It's been great to be with you today. Don't lose trust. There is hope out there. Keep coming back to the Trumpet Radio program for your daily dose of the truth and for where this world is headed. It's great to be with you.